Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jerry Jones, in his weekly radio appearance on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, was asked if it was crazy to think that Mike McCarthy could receive a contract extension after this season. Here's what he said.
To this season, we could be talking about an extension for Mike McCarthy?
Well, I don't think that's crazy at all. That's not crazy. And listen, Mike McCarthy's one an outstanding coach. I was listening to the game last night, watching it, and Aikman was talking about it, and he's reiterated that several times publicly, this Super Bowl winning coach. And Mike McCarthy has been there, done that. He's got great ideas. So bottom line is that in no place in my body language or anything else have you seen indications about what we're going to be doing relative to this staff at the end of this year.
He went on to say, and we shouldn't, we've got a lot of football left. This thing isn't over yet. And then he listed that, you know, Brandon Cooks and DeMarcus Lawrence and Zach Martin and Tyler Smith and Jake Ferguson will all be returning from injuries, and that they're 4-7 and they still are in this thing. I mean, the win Sunday and getting to play the Giants on Thanksgiving Day, who are probably worse than the Cowboys, I guess, that would get them to 5-7. And they still have the Panthers left on their schedule, but they also play the Bengals, the Bucks, the Eagles, and Washington again. I don't see the Cowboys as making a run. And the idea that Mike McCarthy could come back, look, I don't think anybody thinks that Mike McCarthy is a terrible coach. I think everybody understands the situation, just like people viewed the Washington situation for so many years as, you know, Mike Shanahan's a great coach. I mean, Marty Schottenheimer is a great coach. Joe Gibbs, I mean, these are, you know, Hall of Famish, one Hall of Famer and two borderline Hall of Famish coaches. You know, we're not talking about the coaches here. We're talking about the front office, the ownership. It's a top-down problem. And it's the same thing in Dallas. But I'd be shocked if McCarthy came back. Shocked, especially with Ben Johnson, Bill Belichick. You know, do you think Belichick's going to coach again?
I mean, I'm sure. He's so close to the record. Someone is going to hire him.
I think that he will have an opportunity to coach as well. All right, let's go around the NFL. Let's start with the Sunday night game, Philly and the Rams.
At their own 30, Saquon Barkley as the running back. And you said it, Chris. Big opening. Barkley, let loose. Saquon will take it the distance. Touchdown.
Wow. He had in the game a 70-yard touchdown run early in the third quarter and a 72-yard run in the fourth quarter. He set the Philadelphia Eagles rushing single-game rushing record with 255 yards. He also, by the way, had four catches for 47 yards in the game. So he went for 302 total yards of offense. As impressive as it has been recently was Philadelphia's defense. They held the Rams to essentially 13 points. The Rams scored very late in the game. Sacked Matt Stafford 5 times in the football game. Philly defensively, God, they're secondary. They, you know, the Howie Roseman, oh, you know, he stupidly traded for Jahan Dotson, whatever. He totally remade that secondary, and that was their problem last year. They couldn't run, they couldn't cover, and now they are locked down in a lot of different spots, as much as you can be in today's NFL. Philadelphia beat the Rams 37-20, really wasn't even that close. That makes it 7 wins in a row this Sunday, a showdown against the Ravens, who won last night in Baltimore on Sunday. By the way, I don't know if you guys have looked at the forecast for this upcoming weekend, but very cold for, you know, the first day of December. Jaden will play in his coldest game, I believe, of his career Sunday against the Titans. Temperatures expected to be somewhere in the upper 30s to around 40 at kickoff Sunday. Maybe some flurries Sunday morning, but probably clear skies by kickoff. That's a long-range forecast. It's only Tuesday, but the cold weather seems like a certainty. Just to throw that out there, first legit cold game, not, you know, 55 degrees, but legit cold game. But back to Philly. Philly is a 3-point underdog Sunday in the late game at M&T Bank. What a game that sets up to be. Let's go to the Meadowlands Sunday early for the Tommy DeVito debut against the Buccaneers.
Mayfield steps up. He's going to run it. Mayfield at the 5, trying to get in, and he does! Touchdown!
Look, the Buccaneers, we've been talking about them for a while. They are a well-coached team. They are a tough team. They have overcome these injuries that they needed that giant game coming off the bye week because they had lost to the 49ers by 3, lost to the Chiefs in overtime, lost to the Falcons to a 500-yard performance, but still hung in there and had a chance. They had lost to the Ravens on Monday night after, you know, losing all of those players, including Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. They're getting healthier. The Buccaneers have the Panthers, the Raiders in their next two to get above 500. And I think, you're looking at Atlanta's defense, which is the worst in the league right now, that the Buccaneers have a good chance to ultimately win the NFC South. They are coming. They destroyed the Giants on Sunday. DeVito, I mean, clearly proving that the issue wasn't just a Daniel Jones issue. By the way, Malik Nabers went off after the game, and Brian Daboll had to kind of calm him down. The rookie receiver had 6 catches for 64 yards, but I think wasn't targeted until the score was 30-0. Let's go to Charlotte for one of the real surprising games of the day, even though it didn't result in an upset, the Chiefs and the Panthers.
The kick, Schrader, he knocks it through! The Chiefs are a winner today in Charlotte.
Yeah, that was a Spencer Schrader. I think we had him in camp over the summer. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. Kicked a 31-yard field goal after Mahomes on the final drive, after Carolina had tied it and scored on a 2-point conversion to tie it 27-27. Mahomes went down the field and had a 33-yard run on the final drive to set up the field goal. Whatever it takes from him, the Chiefs survive the lowly Panthers 30-27. That makes now their last 4 wins all by a touchdown or less. They play the Raiders on Friday this week, the Black Friday game. Let's go to Soldier Field for Caleb Williams' second game with his new offensive coordinator, this one against the Vikings.
For the win, good snap, good hold, good kick, and the Minnesota Vikings win it in overtime.
In that game, Chicago actually recovered an onside kick. You don't see it happen very much. They were down 24-10 entering the fourth quarter. They came back. Caleb Williams had two touchdown passes. They had a two-point conversion to get it to three. They recovered an onside kick, and Santos made a field goal at the gun to force overtime. But Caleb took a huge sack running around trying to make something happen on the opening drive of overtime, and that ultimately led to Minnesota taking over in decent field position, driving the field and winning. But the two games with the two with the new offensive coordinator now, Caleb Williams, back-to-back games with Thomas Brown as the OC in for Shane Waldron. Last week, they had a shot to beat the Packers. Should have. He was 23 of 31 for 231. No picks in that game. And then on Sunday, 32 of 47, 340 yards, two touchdowns. He has gone for over 100 yards rushing in aggregate in back-to-back games. And he's put together QBRs of 83.9 and 77.4. He looks like a completely different quarterback. They have simplified things. Lots of quick game. They have tried to rely more on a running game, which they were not able to do. You can't run the football against Minnesota. Something to keep in mind when we get to the playoffs. You cannot run it against Minnesota. And they almost pulled off a second straight win over a good division opponent at home. Think about this, Denton. If they had held on against the Packers, they had a field goal blocked at the gun. If they had somehow pulled this off against the Vikings, they'd be a 6-5 football team after, you know, because they've played much better instead of 4-7. They play, by the way, the Lions in the early Thanksgiving Day game in Detroit. Detroit is a 10-point favorite in that game. Let's go to Lambeau for the Packers against a very injured 49ers team.
The ball has been much, much different. Love going to throw a fade here to the corner. It is caught for the touchdown. Malik Heath is in.
By the way, Christian Watson dropped a bomb in that game. He, for as talented as he is, man, he's got some drops on occasion that are just ugly. 38-10 Packers at Lambeau over the 49ers, who did not have Brock Purdy. Brandon Allen quarterbacked. It wasn't good enough. And look, Green Bay is another team that is excellent against the run. The 49ers clearly needing to run the football to have a chance. 16 for 44, 2.8 yards per carry. Christian McCaffrey, 11 for 31 on the ground. McCaffrey's games back now since getting hurt. He had 19 for 79 against Seattle in the loss last week and 11 for 31 against the Packers. The 49ers have certainly become one of the stories of the season when you think about the negative side. They are now 5-6, and they play the Bills Sunday in Orchard Park. And the Bills are coming off the bye after beating the Chiefs. This is not must-win because of the way that division's bunched up. And they still play the Cardinals, but they've already played the Seahawks twice. They split with Seattle. But if the 49ers are going to make a run, it's going to need to include like a win over the Bills or Lions. They have both of those teams on their schedule. That's brutal. Speaking of the Lions, let's go to Indy for the Colts and the Lions.
Goff hands it off. Gibbs cuts to the outside, to the end zone. Touchdown, his second today.
What do you make about what Bill Barnwell said about the Lions? That they don't have a great pass rush. And can you win a Super Bowl without a dominant sort of defensive pass rush player? You know, they didn't sack Anthony Richardson. They sacked Mac Jones the week before that just once. That's Mac Jones we're talking about. Against the Texans in that Sunday night game when they had to come from behind, you know, the Texans have a terrible offensive line. They did sack Stroud in that game four times, but they're 24th in the league in sacks. By the way, they beat the Colts 24-6 on the road. That was a smell test, a loss, and didn't have to do that much. Goff was 26-36 in the game. Jahmyr Gibbs is really taken off as a big-time back in the game, and the Colts couldn't, you know, do much offensively, and they won the game 24-6. The Lions' lone loss was week two to the Buccaneers. They have the Bears on Thanksgiving at home. Let's go to Vegas for the Raiders and the Red Hot Broncos.
Week five. Second down, nine. He's going deep to the end zone. Sutton caught. Touchdown!
So, Courtland Sutton has apparently a quarterback that's interested in throwing the ball, and Courtland Sutton is staying upright. He's a big-time receiver. 8 catches, 97 yards, 2 touchdowns in Denver's 10-point win. Man, the Raiders had a chance to cover late, and we're at the 1-yard line of Denver and did not get it in with Desmond Ridder at quarterback after Gardner Minshew got hurt. Bo Nix, 25 of 42, 273, 2 touchdowns. And yes, he's gaining very quickly on Jaden Daniels. What are the updated odds? Didn't you give them to me yesterday or not?
Yesterday, Bo Nix was plus 135.
And Jaden minus 150?
And Jaden was minus 150.
Yeah. So, tight now in the offensive rookie of the year odds. Look, he's been great. It's not just been throwing the ball short. Guy has thrown one pick in his last 6 games to 11 touchdowns. They've won 4 out of their last 6. The Denver Broncos are right now sitting very solidly in that 7 spot, that last wild card spot, but they're only a half game behind the Chargers for number 6. But Miami's still, you know, right now a team that's gaining ground. But the Broncos, you know, like kind of Washington and Minnesota in the NFC, the surprise teams, they get the Browns on Monday Night Football this coming week. And they have teams like the Colts left, the Bengals on the road. I mean, that Bengals game could still be big. And they close with the Chiefs, who may not need to play for anything at the end of the year. Let's head to Houston for Washington's next opponent, the Titans.
Team plays minus 1 total yards for the Titans and the pick 6. Okonkwo. He's got some inside Texans territory, inside the 35, 30, 25, 20. He may go. Stiff arm, end zone. Touchdown, Titans.
Yeah, that's Chig Okonkwo. Terp. He was a good tight end for Mike Locksley's teams before heading to Tennessee. And the Titans pull off the upset, 32-27. We talked about Houston last week as a team that really didn't look that great. There was a missed field goal. Fairbairn missed a 28-yard field goal. 28-yarder to tie it with about a minute 50 to go. There was a safety late, 32-27, the final. Tennessee is good defensively. They held a Houston rushing attack to 40 yards. Joe Mixon, 14 carries, 22 yards, 1.6 yards per carry. That's what Washington's going to be facing in Tennessee. Tennessee's got good defensive players. Kenneth Murray Jr., Landry, Simmons, Joseph Day. They've got some big-time defensive capability. Offensively, the issue has been Will Levis more than anything else. He took 8 sacks in the game. It's what he does. He turns the ball over and he takes sacks. But they were able to pull it off in part because they can run the football. Tony Pollard's having a decent season for Tennessee. Went for a 119 against Houston's defense. He's got a couple 100-yard plus days on the season. This is a no-joke team coming in. And they just won a game, you know, that they were not expected to win. And they were competitive against Minnesota and the Chargers the weeks before. Defensively, look out. Like, you know, Washington wants to be able to run the football, and they are an excellent rush defense. in this league. They are, right now, I'm pulling up the numbers, I think they're top five. In rushing yards per game, they're eighth right now in the NFL. Eighth. A lot of that has to do with some games that got away early in the season that they got blown out in and they got run on late in those games. But they're no joke defensively. We saw Joe Mixon in that Monday night game against the Cowboys be magical. I mean, he's having a massive year. He's got five games this year of over 100 yards. This was by far and away his worst game. 14 for 22 for Joe Mixon. Gives you an idea of what you're in store for Sunday when it comes to Tennessee's defense. At the same time, maybe Levis will give us a couple of balls up for grabs. Let's go to Seattle for that big NFC West showdown between the Cards and the Seahawks.
Oh, Murray keeps it. Murray being chased by Witherspoon. Oh. Floats for Wilson. Off target to Kobe Bryant. And there goes Kobe Bryant. With a house call for Seattle. And a Marshawn Lynch homage.
That was a defensive touchdown, a 69-yard interception return by Kobe Bryant. It gave Seattle a 13-3 lead. And, you know, in talking to Barnwell earlier, or maybe it was Frank Schwab who we had on the show earlier, I guess what's really impressive is Seattle's defense under Mike McDonald. They held Arizona to just 49 yards rushing in the game. They sacked Kyler Murray five times and held Arizona to 6 points in the game. It's not like it was a turnover fest. They got one turnover in the game, and they made it pay with a pick six. Seattle is in first place, tied with Arizona at 6-5. They've got another game with Arizona a week from Sunday in the desert, Seattle does. Meantime, the Cardinals this week will face a road game at Minnesota. Right now, Denton, who wins the NFC West?
Seattle.
Yeah.
They're more consistent to me. Now, Arizona's a fun team, but they're not consistent, and it feels like defensively with Seattle, they're finally starting to put the pieces together and utilize like the Mike McDonald skill set. And like I don't think Geno's a great quarterback, but I don't think he's going to cost you games down the stretch.
You know, that's one of those teams that if you were a 6 or 7 seed, you know, they're not going to be a 2 seed. They're going to be a 3 or a 4 seed as a division winner. That would be one of those games you would not fear. By the way, for Washington fans, you want somebody other than Arizona to win the division because you own the tiebreaker against Arizona. That's the one team in the playoff race right now that you may end up being in a tiebreaker with that you've got a head-to-head advantage with, the Arizona Cardinals. You beat them. The other teams that may enter that conversation, I think Minnesota and Green Bay will be further ahead of the 7 seed at that point. But, you know, a team like the Rams or the 49ers, you know, or the Buccaneers potentially, or Falcons, you know, you're going to have some opportunities. But the only other teams you've, you know, that could be in it that you've played really is Arizona, you know, unless New Orleans gets back into this thing. All right. Steve Buckhantz is going to jump on with us here shortly. We'll also take a look at, you know, that wild college football Saturday before the end of the show as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Pick up your book bags. Grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Hey, give me my theme music.
Oh, boy. All right, Saturday was a big day, and it turned out to be a shocking day in a lot of places. Where are you going to start?
We're going to start in the SEC because they deserve it. They talked so much nonsense last week about how they were so much better than Indiana, and a 2-loss team should get in over a 1-loss team. And then 3 of their teams all took a 3rd loss. Bama loses to Oklahoma in embarrassing fashion. Their offense can't do anything. They don't even find the end zone against Oklahoma. Ole Miss loses to Florida. All of a sudden, Billy Napier, who was going to get fired 4 weeks ago, is playing. He got his team playing really good football. And then Texas A&M, which you knew about this one, they lost to Auburn. The SEC just completely took a number two all over themselves after saying they were so much better than Indiana. And by the way, Indiana didn't even look that good this weekend. They got shellacked by Ohio State. The score probably should have been a little bit more than it was. They made every mistake in the world against the Buckeyes, yet they're sitting pretty instead of everybody after this weekend.
Yeah, and by the way, Cignetti's getting to be a bit much, too, you know, in talking about just some of the guys that are getting way too chesty. Ohio State was impressive, although I really think in the first half of that game that the game completely turned on the fumbled punt snap, because even though Indiana did not generate enough offense in the game, that seemed to really be, you know, it was that followed by the punt return in the third quarter. I mean, it was two special teams plays that completely flipped that game. Ohio State was the better team, understood. But I really felt like Indiana was in that game much more in that first half, even into the early third quarter, than the score reflected. Like you said, man, Alabama. Look, I gave out Oklahoma. We talked about this. I thought Oklahoma would give their best effort and have a chance to keep it close. I didn't think they'd win the game by three touchdowns. But how about some of those throws from Jalen Milroe? What was he seeing?
Nothing. He just, like, the Jalen Milroe that we saw against LSU, I think we were tricked because he played so well against LSU, but he wasn't throwing. He was using his legs. He was being a great playmaker, which he still is, but he's not a great thrower of the football. So when you go up against a defense that's saying, all right, we're not going to let you run the football on us, you have to throw, you get a 11 of 26 performance and your team doesn't find the end zone.
Yeah, you also mentioned it, man. You know, kudos to Billy Napier at Florida. You know, this was a team that was crushed by injuries. They weren't supposed to be that great to begin with. And they've beaten LSU and Ole Miss in back-to-back weeks. They lost to Texas, but they went into that game with hardly anybody healthy. And they just flipped a big recruit from FSU to them. They play Florida State. They're going to go to a bowl game when it looked like they were having a disastrous season. That was impressive. I told you all week A&M's going to lose to Auburn. Like, that just felt right. I don't know where you stand on this, and maybe we've had this conversation and I just forgot. Deciding a football game in overtime with a two-point play is the dumbest thing in sports. Dumb.
I love it. I think it's so fun.
It's so gimmicky. It's just not reflective of anything that has to do with the game that you've watched. You know, it's not even deciding a basketball game with a three-point shooting contest. It's like, you know, it's some other kind of skill competition. It's really in the idea that this is the safe way to do it. I've contended for a long period of time. These overtimes in college, it's not any safer than playing an NFL rule. Some of these games go ridiculous lengths of time. And sure, you cut down the plays not starting at the 25, but it's just so not reflective of anything having to do with the game. Starting it at the 25 isn't reflective of a real football game because you take, you know, field position and, you know, punt, you know, out of it. But a one-play, two-point conversion starting in the third overtime, I was glad once it got to that point, having Auburn plus three meant that was a guaranteed winner, regardless of who got the two-pointer. What's the Auburn line against? What's the Iron Bowl line this week? I haven't even looked at it.
I haven't looked at it either. I would guess that Alabama is 5.5-point favorite.
It's in Tuscaloosa.
Maybe 7.5. I'm pulling it up now. They're 11.5-point
favorites. Yeah, I was going to say it's more than a touchdown, definitely.
Yeah, the best
Auburn
game
just had a big win. You know,
the best game of this weekend is going to be Clemson, South Carolina.
Yeah, South Carolina's played. What a season they've had! I can't wait to see the rankings tonight. I mean, do you have a sense of, like, is Bama out? Ole Miss out?
I don't think any of those teams are out. I just think they don't control their own destiny anymore because there can still be some craziness.
What's the SEC title game going to be? Georgia against who?
More than likely than not Texas, unless Texas loses and then it gets all wonky again. But Texas
What's
only has one
What's the A&M Texas line Saturday night?
A&M Texas is Texas 5.5 on the road.
Oof. There's some games Saturday, man.
Yeah, they just don't play. Texas just has not looked good on offense. But South Carolina, like, if we're going to do the three-loss SEC team in there, I mean, South Carolina, like, I'm curious to see where they're going to be ranked. Because if they beat Clemson, that's another ranked win. And then if we're debating three-loss SEC teams, like, they have to be in the conversation, even if they didn't do great against some of these teams, although they did beat the brakes out of Texas A&M, but they lose to Alabama because their guy missed a two-point conversion throw that was there. He just sailed it into the fourth row. They got shellacked by Ole Miss, but, like, they're in the conversation.
Yeah,
if
but
doing
they,
that.
They lost that game that they had the big lead in against LSU early in the year, and they went to Tuscaloosa and nearly won.
Right.
Oh, man. All right. What else?
That's all we got for the weekend.
All right. Steve Buckhantz next. Well, we've got royalty on the show today. Steve Buckhantz joins us courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. He is doing the Altcast tonight with, of course, Phil Chenier of the Wizards group play NBA in-season tournament thing, whatever that is, against the Bulls. So check it out on the Monumental Sports Altcast. I will be doing that because Buck and Phil together is iconic in this town. But that's not where I want to start with you. You texted me about Seibert on Sunday, about the snap and the kick on the PAT. First of all, will you share with everybody your kicker credentials in terms of why you can speak expertly on the kicking game?
They're pretty low on the profile, Kevin, but I was a kicker in high school over here in Arlington at Washington Lee High School, which is now called Washington Liberty. And I placed kicked and I punted. But back in the day, as you know, everybody was a straight-on kicker. There was no such thing as a soccer-style kicker. So it was the kind of the Mark Mosley approach, and then it evolved, obviously, into, you know, Jan Stenerud and all of those guys that kicked soccer-style. So I did that. Those are my credentials, Kevin.
So tell everybody what you thought about Seibert's day, specifically about the final PAT.
Well, I think as I looked at the thing as a whole, it was a combination of a lot of things that caused that kick. But what fans need to understand is it's not just the kicker who makes the kicks. It's the snap, it's the holder, and obviously it's the protection. But in this case, you know, I don't – and listen, yes, you can get inside of a kicker's head. So if you miss a field goal and then you come back and you maybe miss an extra point, and keep in mind extra points now are 33 yards. Back in the day they were 10 yards and then they became 20, and the NFL just said, you know, hey, we need
nobody
to make this
harder.
Nobody
remembers them being 10 yards. Yeah. Nobody, well, I saw, there are just a few people remember the goalpost being at
the goal line. And I remember Tom Dempsey, who kicked for the Eagles, who originally held the record 63 yards, missed an extra point because he kicked it off the side of that little club foot that he had, and he missed one from 10 yards, which is hard to believe, but it happened. But at any rate,
if you go back and you check out box scores pre-1973 or 74 or whatever, when the goalposts moved back to the end zone, you would see field goals of 8 and 9 yards. Because if you got to the 1 yard line, 7 yards back was an 8 yard field goal.
Exactly, exactly. So there were a lot of factors, I think, Kevin, that went into this thing. First of all, he's coming in off a layoff, obviously. He missed, the previous two games. So
he's hurt. Hip.
There's that to think about. But as a kicker, and I wrote, this is what I texted you, 70% of the time when there's a bad snap, whether it's high or low, and in this instance, I think Tress Way did a really good job to pull that thing up off the ground and set it up with the laces facing away. 70% of the time, the kicker is still going to make that kick. But maybe 30% of the time, it definitely affects the approach and the kick and the timing. Timing is huge for a place kicker. And these guys practice that, obviously. And when that snap was low like that, it can throw you off. Now, like I said, especially on an extra point, which is 33 yards, which is still, you know, you can miss that, which obviously happened. That snap and that hold needs to be really perfect, and they practice that all day long. And when it's not, it can affect you. It can get inside your head. Now, maybe his head was already a little messed up because he missed, and he's coming off of a layoff. But what I find this interesting, Kevin, is that here's the guy that came in his first game and made 7 for 7 field goals. This is the same guy. So he's good, but, you know, and he's, I think he's very good, but he had a bad day, and you can't put that kick all on him. The snap, first of all, was not good, so you got to put some of it on the snapper. The hold was really good by Way, but clearly it affected the timing, and that's what I think fans need to understand is it's not just, hey, let's get the ball down and the guy kicks it. When that snap is low like that, in, as the kicker makes his approach, he wants everything to be perfect, and when it's not, sometimes it can really affect the kick, and I think that's what happened in this case.
What was your longest field goal at Washington and Lee?
I think 46 yards. My longest punt was 66 yards. I got a tremendous roll. It went all the way down to the one-yard line, and one of my guys downed it. But that was a lot of fun back then.
But still, a 46-yarder in 1958 is a long field goal. That's a long
Kevin,
kick.
I was three then. Thank you very much.
All right. You're back with Phil tonight on the Altcast for Wizards Bulls. How much do you miss calling the games on a night-in, night-out basis with Phil?
You know, this sounds a little like a cliche because I hear a lot of athletes say this and coaches and what have you, and even guys in our business. I miss the camaraderie. You know, I miss calling the games. The games are a lot of fun. I don't like the preparation. That's a lot. But the games are a blast to call. I've said this before. You could ask Kevin 100 sportscasters in our business what they really like to do, and 99 of them will tell you play-by-play. There's nothing better, and you've done some play-by-play. There's nothing better than that. And at this level, the NBA level, when you're standing on the court next to Michael Jordan or LeBron James or Kobe Bryant or whoever it happens to be, you got to pinch yourself. You know, I used to do it all the time. Sometimes I just stand there and go, I can't believe I'm here. And it was, you know, doing the play-by-play is a lot of fun, but it's really being with all of the people at the arena, the security people. Some of those people are my best friends, and the people in the organization, and, of course, the other broadcasters. It's a very small fraternity of broadcasters. You know, there's only 30 local TV play-by-play guys for, you know, in the NBA with each team, and we're all very good friends, and even the radio guys too, and there's those guys, so obviously Dave Johnson and Glenn Consor and those guys, and the guys that are doing the games now. You know, there's no competition between me and Phil and Chris Miller and Drew Gooden. Those guys are our closest friends. I mean, Chris obviously did sidelines with us for 12-13 years, and I did a lot of games with Drew, so and this Altcast is on the Monumental Sports Network, so we're all in this together. And I don't want to take anything away from Chris and Drew because I think they do a really good job. So for me, this is going to be a lot of fun because Phil and I, we talk all the time, we text all the time, we get together once a month and have dinner or whatever, and we reminisce, you know. And I think that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to tell some stories. You know, it's an Altcast. It's an alternative way to watch the game. Now, look, as a purist, Kevin, I would rather watch the game and listen to the play-by-play guys. But this is a different way of watching the game, just like the Manning cast. It's a way of exploring some other avenues about the game. We'll get into the game if it's close. We'll engage it and that thing. But I think tonight's going to be a lot about stories, you know, that Phil and I shared over the 20 years we did the game.
There's some that you won't be able to share.
Yes, there's some that we won't be able to share. Because, you know, they had an edict when we were back then, and just like the Las Vegas thing, and the edict was what happens on the team plane stays on the team plane. However, the statute of limitations is up on that, Kevin, so there are some things that I can talk
careful.
About that I can tell.
Be careful, because some may be coming back your way, too. You know what I'd love to hear from Buck? Buck is the number one restaurant advisor, restaurant critic for any major city, certainly any NBA city in town, and you are that for our city as well. So you always enjoy food talk. I've got a question for you. We haven't talked about this.
Okay.
How much has Al Michaels lost his fastball?
You know, I think... I mean, look, he's one of the best play-by-play guys ever, in my opinion. Ever.
I agree.
And, excuse me, and I think he's still strong. But you can, listen, you can tell when you listen to a broadcaster when they're starting to age. And it's all about age, really, because you hear them start to very slightly slur their words just a little bit. Now, look, this happened with Jack Buck. It happened with Pat Summerall. As we get older, you tend to, you know, slur just a little bit. Or maybe you don't react quite as quickly as you would have when you were absolutely on top of the game. And I think that's what we're seeing from him. Now, I listened intently the other night when he did the game, and I guess it was Thursday night, and
the snow game.
You know, I thought he was pretty much on it. But the other thing, too, Kevin, is that back in the day when this used to happen, maybe when it happened to Jack Buck or whomever it was, even Costas, there was no social media, so you didn't really, didn't hone in on it. Now, right. Everybody and their brother is coming out and saying, oh, he's lost it, he should be done, you should quit, this, that, and the other thing. You know, he should quit when he wants to quit because he deserves that. And, you know, maybe somebody will point it out to him or maybe he'll see it. But I think he's still good enough to be doing the games and he's good at it. But I understand what you're saying, and it happens.
Who's
it happens
your
as we get older.
Right now? Who's your favorite play-by-play? It can be any sport. Who's your absolute, he is the best there is right now?
Unequivocally, it's Ian Eagle.
How about his son?
Yeah, his son's good, but, you know, I mean, apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But right. Ian is the best at what he does. Not only is he so good at seeing everything that happens on the field, all the nuances, all the quirks, all the things. He obviously knows the rule. He knows how to call a game. He knows how to rise to the drama of a game. And obviously, we're good friends because he calls the Nets. And he's a hysterically funny guy, really funny, and a great guy. So all those things go into it for me. But when I watch him and listen to him do a game, and we text during games all the time, I think he's really, really good. Now, look, Jim Nantz is as good as you're going to get, too. I mean, he's fantastic. But those guys, in terms of network, TV, play-by-play guys, would be my favorites. And, you know, back in the day, obviously, you had Summerall and Brookshire and all the guys that were at CBS that are long gone, but Ray Scott and Frank Lieber, and I'm going way back, but yeah. But those guys are the best. And I just think Ian is on top of it. He's really good. And Marv Albert, obviously, was legendary as well.
Well, Breen, who you know pretty well, is excellent.
Mike Breen is great. I should have mentioned him at the top as well. And
I
know
Tirico's
him well.
He's great.
Tirico's fantastic. There's a lot of really good guys. Gus Johnson, obviously, who was my intern at Channel 5. You know, he's become very, very popular.
Yep.
And, you know, Van Pelt, I don't think he does a whole lot of play-by-play. He does some, I guess, but he was another one that was my intern at Channel 5. So
yes, he was.
It's a small business, Kevin. Obviously, you and Scott are very close, and all you guys were with us at Channel 5. And it's a very small business. Chick is doing a great job with his play-by-play now with CBS Sports Network. And but Breen is great. And listen, there isn't a classier dude in this business than Mike Breen. He is, I'm telling you, you know, some of these guys have it in their head and they get, you know, really pretentious and all of that. He's the most unpretentious guy I've ever met for being as big as he is. He is just a fantastic guy and a great, great play-by-play guy.
All right. Have fun tonight.
We're not talking any planes, Kevin. You're disappointing me.
No, we'll do plane crashes next time. I'm out of time now because or they'll crash this one. But we haven't had any good ones to talk about in a while.
No. We don't have to talk about crashes. We can talk about other plane stuff.
Well, we can just do morbid plane crash talk the next time you're on. But we'll let everybody enjoy the holiday week. I'll talk to you later. Enjoy tonight.
I will. Looking forward to being with Phil and J.P. Finley on the Altcast. Thanks, Kevin.
It'll be awesome. All right. Steve Buckhantz, everybody. Back tomorrow.